Welcome to the 129th episode of the Reading and Writing Podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Rutherford. Stay tuned for my interview with Harrison Demchick, author of the novel, The Listeners. Stay tuned for the interview. Welcome back to the Reading and Writing Podcast. My guest today is Harrison Demchick, author of the new horror novel, The Listeners. Harrison, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Sure. Well, as we get started, can you read the first page or two of your new novel, The Listeners?
Sure. Starts with a chapter called The Knock. The knock stabs at the air so hard it bleeds. Sound lingers like the endless vibration of a tuning fork, cascading from loud chime to low, insistent hum, from the plaster of the ceiling to the space between the hairs of the egg white carpet. The woman grips the collar of her pink, stringy bathrobe as she shuffles to the door, which shakes again on the strength of three heavy raps. When she speaks, she chokes on her own words. "Who's there?" she says. Through the door, the response is muffled but tough. "Police," a man says. Kneading her shirt between her knuckles, the woman takes a cautious step back, the heel of her tensed right foot rising above the deep red stain that never would come out, and says, as loudly as she can, which isn't very, "I don't believe you." The door does not reply. It only stares, accusing and cruel. And then its face breaks in from the back with a horrible crunch, plaster and wood collapsing as the door propels open, its doorknob bashing into the wall like a battering ram. A bearded man charges forward through the gap, aiming a night-black pistol directly at the woman. She stumbles backwards, tripping over her own heel and falling down onto the carpet. The man who stands in front of her is not a police officer, and he has only one ear. "Stay down," the man says. "Stay down." "Is anyone else here?" The second man, broad and black, steps through the cracked and broken door frame. He waves a similar gun around the room in a rainbow arc. He, too, has only one ear, his right, with only a flat, wide bandage where the left ear used to be. And as he aims, his alert white eyes scanning the room in a perfect sweep, a third man squeezes in behind him. Except the third man isn't a man. The third man is a boy. My husband's a police officer," the woman says, now on her hands and feet in some sort of crab walk, scuttling away. "We know," says the first man. "Stay down," says the second. "Is Detective Joel McDonald home?" The boy, small and skinny, disappears behind the second man, his eyes looking down toward his shoes, gray and worn, the start of a hole by the toes of the right foot. He holds his own gun to his side, cold against his thigh, where the only person it can hurt is himself. From somewhere comes the creak of a door, descending like a nervous violin. No, he's not here," cries the woman. "Then we'll wait," says the second man. "Mom?" The voice is a new voice, a girl's voice, cutting through the clamor, but only for a moment. The second man, the alert man, spins around, his gun pointed in a perfect beeline through the head of the teenage girl standing just outside the apartment's stuffy little hallway. "What's happening?" says the girl. The boy, who wears a torn white undershirt, does not look at the girl. He looks instead into the small kitchen only a couple yards away, staring as if it's some oasis in the faraway distance. A silver scrape in the white counter glows just slightly white under the hum of fluorescent lights. He stares at the scrape until it seems to be a living thing, wiggling and wriggling, and he squeezes his own thumb so hard his knuckle cracks. And consequently, he doesn't see the second man pointing his gun at the girl, or the girl turning toward the boy with the sad eyes of recognition. "Danny?" says the girl. That breaks his concentration. Now, the boy, whose name is Daniel, glances her way, but it's a half look at best, tilting from the corners of his quickly blinking eyes. His breath catches halfway through the exhale, like a thin shirt on a sharp twig. And when he pulls it free, it tears a little, just a little. "Hi, Katie," he says.
Great. Well, if the people listening to this podcast aren't familiar with your new novel, The Listeners, how would you describe the novel?
Oh, The Listeners is a coming-of-age story in a horror-thriller context. In a borough quarantine due to an airborne illness that causes deformity, insanity, and death, A 14-year-old boy named Daniel, orphaned by the plague, is caught up with a one-eared gang-slash-cult called the Listeners. But all he really wants is to find his best friend, Katie, trapped elsewhere in the quarantine.
Great. Well, do you remember what gave you the original idea or inspiration for the novel?
Well, The Listeners was originally a series of short stories developed during the summer before my senior semester of college and in preparation for an independent study. And essentially, because it was a collection of short stories, I was looking for a scenario that would allow for these different stories to exist and to coexist and to join one from the other. And the quarantine scenario is what came to mind. And the characters emerged from that. And ultimately, after a lot of development in a lot of different ways, Daniel took the lead role. But as far as the listeners themselves, the one-eared cult that lends its name to the book, that came from an article I read. I don't remember the context for the article. I don't remember what it was specifically about, but it referred to as something to do with the voluntary removal of a body part. And I started to think about that in terms of religion and cults and the symbolism involved in the ear. And to refer to the symbolism sounds like kind of a writer's cop-out answer, but religion is fundamentally about symbolism. And the idea of a group marked by the removal of an ear became very compelling to me. And they came very quickly to populate this world that was developing.
Interesting. So I know that horror movies remain popular at the box office, but horror novels seem to kind of wax and wane in terms of popularity with readers. What appeals to you about the horror genre and writing, horror short stories and fiction?
Well, I think any genre tends to wax and wane a little bit because there are always trends. There are always things that are more popular now than they were before and vice versa. As far as horror in particular, the odd thing is that I don't really come from a background of reading a lot of horror. Mm-hmm. I wasn't even thinking of this as a horror novel as I wrote it. It's only after I had done so that came to be the obvious classification. I mean, and it is obvious. It's clearly what it is, but it's not what I was particularly thinking or focused on. But I've come to read horror a lot more now and recently as the novel approached publication and now after it's been published. And the fundamental appeal of horror is, done right, it's compelling storytelling, as any great story would be. It puts its protagonist in particularly dire circumstances, has a ton of conflict, has all of those things working for it. But also the tension inevitable in being scared and being terrified. I think it's where a lot of the appeal comes from. And even if its level of popularity may come and go, it's been a remarkably enduring genre overall. For I think that reason is there's always something scary out there, and horror speaks to that most primal element, the fight or flight instinct.
Sure. Have you always wanted to be a writer? When did you first start writing?
My parents still have the first story I ever wrote from kindergarten. it's illustrated. It's about the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And I've been writing at least since then. And it's always been something I've loved. It's always been something I gravitated toward. It's not something I realized I could do for a living until I was in eighth grade. It just hadn't clicked for me until then that there were actual people who made their actual living writing stories, which is already something I absolutely loved to do. And what made it click for me then was actually the letters page of a Spider-Man comic. in which a reader said something to the effect of, you always know, when J.M. DeMatteis is in the credits, and that was the writer of this issue. It's going to be a great story, something like that. And that's what made me realize there are actual people doing this. And since then, I've wanted to be a writer professionally. And at first it was comic book writing, and, you know, I'd still like to do that. But it evolved over time into screenwriting and now the novel.
And I know that you, as you just mentioned, that you've written screenplays as well as novels and short stories. What appeals to you about writing screenplays versus a short story or novel?
Oh, I absolutely love the screenplay format. The screenplay format is such a distinctive blend of creativity and logic, because it's a particularly strict format. To those who don't know it terribly well, just a brief run through. Your typical screenplay is 120 pages. It has three acts. The first act ends around page 30. The second act ends around page 90. It has a midpoint in page 60. Page 90 is the hero's lowest moment, leading to the climax and ending around page 120. One page is about 1 minute of screen time. And if that seems very, very strict and overly structured, it can be. But part of the challenge of writing a screenplay is writing a story that does not feel that way, that hits those points, because that format does work. It is a great structure for telling a great story. Hits those points though without feeling like it is, without feeling robotic, and that's the great challenge. The structure is almost like a skeleton. And we all have the same skeleton, but we're all very different on the outside. And that's how screenwriting works. I've really gravitated toward the format ever since I started doing it, because I am the same strange combination of creative and logical. Working a great story into that particular context to figure out the best way to tell it and show it especially because it's such a visual medium. Holds particular appeal to me. It remains my favorite format, and I always wish I could devote more time to it.
Was it hard for you initially to get used to kind of the strict format, as you mentioned, the, you know, page 30 and the other points of the format?
Of course it's a challenge at first, and the general rule of thumb is that you need to write 7 to 10 screenplays before you get good at it and really figure out the language of it. And that's probably true for any genre as well. But it's certainly true for screenplays. It was certainly true for me. And the early screenplays had a lot wrong with them. These are documents that I would never show to anybody. In fact, I may have already trashed them in some form so nobody can ever see them, just to protect myself. I am somebody who gravitates toward structure. It's part of what makes me a good editor. So I took to it, and at this point it's second nature. Still a challenge, still a huge challenge to write a screenplay that works, in a long process, but it's something I really truly understand. And the structure can be incredibly useful as well, because it was actually adapting those short stories, the original short stories that would eventually form Listeners, actually adapting that into a screenplay first and making the screenplay the primary thing for a while, that gave me this narrative structure that allowed me to adapt the screenplay into the novel, The Listeners.
Interesting. Well, I know that you did a creative writing program, if I'm not mistaken, from reading your bio, in college. What was that experience like for you?
Well, it was an English major with a creative writing concentration at Oberlin, and the experience, to be honest, was a bit mixed. I had some conflicts with the creative writing department that I don't want to go into too much depth on, because, you know, it's a long time ago at this point. Sure. But the classes I was at, but when I was able to take the classes, they were incredibly useful, incredibly helpful, as any workshop environment is inevitably going to be, because you gain so much from hearing the feedback of others and also from learning to critique the work of others. It was formative not only as far as developing my own writing, but as far as developing my skills as an editor, which has been my professional life since graduating.
Interesting. And as you write your writing process, do you find that you're more of an organic writer, or do you outline extensively before you start working on a screenplay or a novel or a short story?
I don't outline a short story, but I do outline the others, and I've done so more and more since I began screenwriting. It became very important for the screenplays because of what the structure is, and breaking it down in advance and having this idea of when everything will happen was extremely useful. Now, inevitably, you don't stick to the outline. Things change. Things always do. There, you encounter problems you did not think were going to be there. The outline is never set in stone, but I found it very, very helpful. And at this point, I would certainly outline novels as well as screenplays, anything that's going to be in the longer form, because structure is really a crucial part of storytelling. I sort of give an example of how structure can make a difference. In when I was giving the synopsis of listeners before, I said what Daniel wants most is to find his best friend Katie. I also read the first chapter, in which he clearly does find Katie. That was not the case in the screenplay. It was not the case in the first drafts of the novel. In both forms, he didn't find Katie until it's proper chronological place in the story. That changed to this framing device in later drafts of the novel, because I felt I felt that structure would be more effective in telling the story, hooking the reader early, and raising the question instead of "Will he?" making instead of that what leads to it, and what happens after.
Right.
And of course, maybe that was the right call, maybe it wasn't, but structure is a huge factor in how a story is experienced, and outlining helps a great deal with that.
Right. What books or authors do you read that kind of inspire your fiction that you particularly enjoy as a reader?
There again, we come to the oddity that I was not reading a great deal of horror fiction before I started, novel, and I generally haven't growing up. So my favorite authors aren't the kind of authors who you'd expect to lead into a novel of this particular nature. I love Salman Rushdie, Kurt Vonnegut, George Saunders, Douglas Adams, my favorite, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, and that could not possibly be further removed from the listeners, obviously. I continue to read a good deal of Spider-Man comics. My favorite comic writer is John Mark DeMatteis, the same one who was praised in that particular letters page all those years ago. Those are certainly the fundamental influences, not in terms of genre, but in terms of making me want to write and developing my writing in various directions.
Sure. You've had the success of getting the listeners published, and you referenced earlier that you've been working for many years as an editor. Given that, what advice would you have for someone who's listening who is an aspiring writer and would like to have their own fiction published?
First and foremost, have it edited. Of course, at this point, you don't need to go through traditional publishing and self-publish. It's increasingly popular and is a perfectly valid way to go about it. But even there, you want to make sure that your work rises up above the million books that are published every year in one form or another. And if you're going traditional publishing, you want to make sure that yours rises above all the manuscripts any editor is going to be reading. Some publishers will help you develop your work. I've always been in a position to be able to help with that, but a lot won't. And you want to make sure that what you're putting forward is the best manuscript you can possibly present. And the difference between a writer or an author, that's what I've always told the authors I've worked with. The difference is editing. An author edits. An author takes that time to improve their manuscript and to work with a professional to determine exactly what's working, what's not working, and why it's not working, and how it can be fixed. Taking that time is absolutely the best shot anybody has to get published, or if they self-publish, to get noticed.
Sure. What are you working on now?
I'm working on a number of different things right now. There's a short story. I'm working on a screenplay, a cryptozoological dramedy, which is something I've been working on for a while, and I really want to finish and have out there. I'm working on a musical, a zombie musical, and various other songs. And I keep bouncing between all of these different things, and sooner or later something will take over and that will be the one that gets finished. But in the meantime, just I'm working wherever I feel inclined to work at this particular time.
Gotcha. And where can people find you online?
I am online at www.harrisondemchick.com or facebook.com/HarrisonDemchick.
Great. Well, again, we've been speaking with Harrison Demchick, author of The Listeners, which is available now. Harrison, thanks for doing the podcast.
Thank you.